Today, a conversation with Steve Keane, episode 4, all about data and crowdfunding. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And so we come to the final episode in our series with Steve Keane. So we're going to touch on two things today. Firstly, how Steve funds his activities. And secondly, we're going to discuss data, because both Steve and I are very data intensive, although in different ways. So Steve, let's start with the question of how do you fund yourself?
Yeah, I was at Kingston University for some years, as you know. And one thing, I've learnt that there's a particular rule in the education system, how education policy develops. It starts with Australia develops a stupid idea. English think, oh, that's really cool. We'll try something even more stupid. And America, Australia looks, oh, that was really mad. Let's do something even worse. So in 2011 or 12, I think it was, the Australian government, and this is under I think it was actually, was that, well, that would have been Gillard, wouldn't it? Probably, so I'm not blaming Liberals for this one, decided to deregulate student numbers entirely, so universities could decide how many positions they offered in every subject rather than having those terrible government controls. It'd make it more like a market. Well, what happened was, you know, the students here have a, they give five preferences. And if you, back before when there were quotas, they, students would look and think, well, I don't think I'm going to get enough to get into Sydney or New South, so I'll make UWS a first priority. So we used to get about 120 first preferences at UWS. The year that change came in, Sydney and New South Wales, open slather, bums on seats, as many students as possible, dropped their entry standards because they could. And we went from 120 first preferences to 16 in 1 year. And then our delightful leader, whatever her name was, Janice Reid, I think, decided to retrench 30% of the academic staff and shut down the economics department, not knowing that she needed to have one because of the accountants needed for an economic course for accreditation, made five of the six professors redundant, including me. And then I got, so I was supporting myself through Rupert Murdoch, paying me for columns in the Business Spectator. And then out of the blue, I got an offer of a job in Kingston, and I went over to Kingston University in the UK, to find that the year I'd arrived, the British had copied exactly the same idea, deregulated first-year intake. Now, the UK system is much more sclerotic than the Australian, but it meant that the humanities intake in Kingston went from about 15,000 to 7,000 over 4 years, economics having a similar fall, 50% fall in student numbers. That destroyed our financing. At the time, I was setting up a Patreon page, which is a continuous time crowdfunding source to raise money for my software package Minsky. They then told me that they would either want me to, rather than being retrenched, they wanted me to either work four times as much or take one quarter pay. I didn't want to spend four times as much of my time teaching, so I said I'll take the one quarter pay and I'll try Patreon out. And very rapidly I was getting equivalent to my salary in Kingston. Now I've got about 1200 supporters paying me about $9,000 a month. I would like to get more so I can hire research staff, but that's what's keeping me alive. So Patreon, website's www.patreon.com/profstevekeane. And yours is?
Well, I've got one for the DFA, so DFA. We'll put both links up.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Patreon is actually supporting the DFA work.
Yeah.
Because creating all these videos and, you know, everything else, as you can see, there's a bit of kit required to make it all work, and that's all come from the Patreon contribution.
And I think it's a fantastic concept because it means people can directly support creatives whose work they enjoy. It was begun by a YouTube musician who found he wasn't getting enough out of YouTube, and what he's recreated is like the Medici of the 15th century, but now the Medici is the public, and if they like an artist, they can support the artist for a dollar a month and up. And that's what's keeping me alive and keeping me in Europe and keeping me kicking.
And what I find really interesting is that people can actually throw ideas and questions and engage, right? And that for me is actually one of the most powerful, you know, parts of this.
Well, I had dinner with some of my Patreons last night, and you know, like one of them has now got me in touch with one of the leading people in System Dynamics to give feedback on the development of Minsky. And I get a lot of creative feedback from my patrons. So it's, you become part of a creative community, and that's just, it's a wonderful thing. So I'm a great fan of Patreon, and I've been a supporter of crowdfunding for a decade. I've 40 or 50 projects I've helped crowdfunded myself because I'm interested in new technology and new ideas. Mm. But yeah, it's a fantastic service to keep the creative class alive.
Yeah, absolutely. So support Steve.
Support Dan Martin, DFI.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
Okay. Now, before we finish, I just want to touch on another area, and that is data, because we are both data-intensive people. And I suppose it's true to say that we probably look at data a little bit differently, but I'd love to get your thoughts on how data has evolved, is being used, and how it might be used going forward.
Yeah.
You do use a lot of data.
Yep.
I have a lot of data.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a synergy.
I think there is, because my data, I use aggregate data, because mm-hmm. I'm looking at the aggregate creation of credit by private lending, and then I do correlations of private debt to GDP. So, for example, I can find, in the American case, if I look at the housing market, you can look at the level of household debt and house prices, and you look at the house debt was going up and coming down, and house prices going up and coming down and going back up again. And you look at it, there's no particular relationship. Mm. My logic is that what drives house prices is new mortgage debt. So if you want to see what's the physical number of houses that can be purchased, like the idea of an average house, you divide new mortgages by the price level, and right. You've got the flow of demand per year. Yep. And then you've got a flow of supply on the other side, which is much more rigid. So I'll leave the supply side out of this discussion. So what you've got is a relationship in new mortgages, which is change in mortgage debt, and the price level. You therefore have a relationship between change in new mortgages and change in the price level. So that relationship, which is actually acceleration of the level of mortgage debt, gives you the change in house prices. When I do a correlation on that, I get a correlation coefficient of about 0.7. Now, of course, it's completely different for the Australian market. I get a correlation coefficient, I think, of about 0.66, you know. So basically exactly the same dynamics drive both systems. And you will have rising house prices if you have accelerating mortgage debt. Yep. You'll have falling house prices if you have decelerating mortgage debt. So my stuff's the aggregate level. Mm. Now you've got this gorgeous, really detailed household. So tell me about that.
So we've been surveying households since 2005. Yeah. Right? 52,000 each year.
52,000?
Right? Each year, yeah.
Wow.
4,500 a month, 1,000 a week. So it's a running survey.
Who does the survey for you?
Well, I can't disclose the research agency. It's but one of the big guys.
I'm going to guess it's someone like, not Morgan, AJ. Anyway, I've worked with a few of them over time. So a survey company does surveys on your behalf.
And the reason I can't disclose it is because they also do their own surveys, uh-huh. and they work for some of the big banks. Uh-huh. And the particular agency that does the work for me doesn't necessarily always agree with my conclusions.
I can imagine that.
So there's a mutual NDA that says they're happy to do the work and get paid for it. Give me the data, then I do all the analysis. So I've got all of this information, right? We're back from 2005 onwards, right?
And 2005?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's basically saying, tell me about households, so individual households, profile, demographic, psychographic, those sorts of things,
okay.
Financial, money in, money out, you know, so I can look at their property exposure, their mortgages, their other credit, their savings as well, their superannuation, so their total financial footprint, which allows me to then calculate net worth. I can calculate their cash flow. Then I run algorithms across it to sort of segment them into different types of households based on those geodemographic elements. And also look at the financial profile. I can measure their mortgage stress. And you know, I've been reporting mortgage stress for years and years and years.
Wow,
and
basically,
it was growing up until 2008. Rates got cut. It eased back.
Yeah.
And now it's been accelerating away again. And now we've got 32% of households in mortgage stress.
That's how many?
32%.
32%.
32% of
Australian households.
Correct.
In mortgage stress.
And that's high as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a leading indicator because effectively, give you an example. Mandurah, over in the west, 2 years ago, I called this out as the most stressed postcode in the country, right?
Yeah.
We've just done a post, it's come out today, going back to there 2 years later and seeing all the properties for sale, all of the negative equity, and all of the social issues that have actually now come to the surface because of that stress 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So mortgage stress is an early indicator of issues later,
right?
Whereas, of course, the Reserve Bank only worries about defaults.
That's right. After it's already, once you're dead, we worry about you.
Correct. Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to have a sense of, you know, seeing it early.
Yeah.
Right. So I actually model defaults, probability of default as well, and risk of loss to the bank. So that whole journey from mortgage stress. So for my mind, looking at how household finances are going, and it's pretty sad to see.
Yeah, well, this is actually back on like the Royal Commission. Yeah. Do you have a favourite document the Royal Commission discovered?
Well, I think the Westpac data set is the one that, for me...
Well, let's talk about that after we finish. But my favourite is the NAB Household Expenditure Calculator.
Oh, okay.
You see that one?
Yeah.
When I looked at that, I thought, this is fraud. Hmm. The people who put this together should be in jail.
Yeah.
And my favourite statistic out of there's lots of the stats in that. Have you ever taken a detailed look at the numbers?
Yes, I have.
Crazy. Yes. But like they claim that a couple with no child... on 400,000 gross a year, which means a net of what, about 25,000, are spending, I think from memory, 3,716 per month, and therefore have 21 and a bit thousand dollars that they can put towards running a mortgage. And if they're so silly as to have a child, the child will set them back a mere $7 a day.
I know. Cheap, half the price.
You know, absolute total fraud. Yep. And this is what they call the household expenditure model.
Yep.
And that's, you know, when I remember when 2010, like when the housing... grant expired and the house price started to fall and then the reserve started cutting rates and people were back borrowing again, I was perplexed as to how can households take in more debt than they've got right now?
Yep.
You see this figure and some poor bastard ringing up and asking a bank a question, they don't get to see the spreadsheet. That's, you know, had to be disclosed by the Rowena Orr's team doing his discovery.
Yep.
But the person on the phone says, oh, yes, you can afford a mortgage of blah. Oh, really? Do you think we can? Yes, you're fine. Yes, with the calculations. Oh, okay. Well, and therefore the household debt levels rise again. Right. And it's just sheer blatant fraud.
Yep. Well, I just want to build on that, right?
Yeah.
If you look at what APRA and RBA report, right, it's all about loans. It's not about household debt, right?
Okay.
There is a fundamental difference between my models, which look at total household debt, might have 2, 3, 4 mortgages all under one roof, compared with individual loan reporting.
Number of loans, okay. So they...
Right? So the APRA statistics is loan by loan by loan by loan. There's no household overlay at all.
So they don't aggregate to the household level?
No. And in fact, there was a Senate request that they actually APRA report back as to whether they looked at it from a household perspective at all.
Mm, yeah.
And basically they said, no, it's not important, not relevant, which I find amazing, right?
Yeah.
Second point on that is that APRA and the Reserve Bank, in particular the Reserve Bank now, has this mortgage-backed security risk model that they, you know, say got lots and lots of data. But that is loan-based again.
Yeah.
Right? So all of the information
yeah.
they're actually basing all of their discussions on is actually myopic. That it's myopic because you have to look at it at a household debt level
to see what the actual load is on
what
that.
What the real household is, not the individual loan level.
Yeah,
and that is one of the most fundamental issues that I think needs to be brought up to the surface.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's so much. You look at it, and you often wonder how can you sleep at night. And the basic reason you've got to have such mental blindfolds on, you can't even see what you're doing. And that applies to our so-called regulators here.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. And they justify their own position because that's the available information that they can get from the banks. The banks only report on, guess what, loan-level information.
Yeah.
So to me, the missing part of the puzzle here is the household story, which is why there's mortgage stress and household survey.
And again, my aggregate data looks at the level of household debt.
Yep.
So we're actually looking at the same thing from different perspectives.
Yeah.
You and I can see a catastrophe in the making, and the rest of those so-called regulators are just saying, oh, everything's hunky-dory.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it?
Indeed. Let's share data.
We will. Thank you. Okay. Excellent. So, Steve, thank you so much for being generous with your time and sharing your thoughts with us on the channel here. All 4 shows will, of course, be up very soon. And happy travels back up into Europe. But let's keep in touch and see how the issues that we've touched on today evolve. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. And just a final reminder, do consider supporting Steve and myself via our respective Patreon channels. This is a really important source of funding for us to be able to do what we are currently doing. I'll see you next time.